Hey, Zero Block 30 listeners, you can find us every Tuesday and Friday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. Prime members can also listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Quality sleep optimizes recovery, helping professional and everyday athletes perform their best. Only the Sleep Number Smart Bed is proven to improve the quality of sleep and provides valuable insights that can be used to support overall wellness. Talent on a college team allows the best players to outperform their opponents, but in the NFL, everyone is talented. Players entering the draft need every competitive edge they can get, starting with quality sleep. Training will only get more intense as players transition to the pros, so to optimize recovery, they can rely on Sleep Number for consistent, high-quality sleep. Experience game-changing sleep with a Sleep Number smart bed only at a Sleep Number store.
Welcome back to another edition of Zero Block 30. It's a Friday edition here, and we actually know what day it is at the top of the show, which is nice because today we have five rounds of the magazine for you. Round number one, we're going to have a little table of eight. And because we are sick and tired of eating at home or ordering out, we want to have a little nice little dinner. So the three of us are going to make believe, kind of like, I guess, Hook, whenever Peter Pan went back. Oh, there you are, Peter. We're going to have a table of eight. Each one of us prepared three names. At the end of this round, we're going to vote to see who actually gets to be at our table with us. Round number two, ding, ding. Our chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff beefed with the Secretary of Defense at a live televised press conference. You guessed it. It was about haircuts. The saga continues. Can anyone save us at all or shave us? And round number three, an airman is in deep trouble for flinging his propeller. We're talking about his ding-dong, folks, his wiener or his penis, all over a Florida TJ Maxx. Buddy, flashing people is so out of style, especially when you should have been at home anyway. Round number four, this one's going to move you a little bit. It's an interview that we did with Navy Captain Charlie Plum, 06, a colonel for those keeping home score at home. He was a prisoner of war for nearly 6 years. His insight on life, his perspective, the things that he's doing now, all of it's incredible. Charlie Plum joins us to tell of his story at the Hanoi Hilton. And finally, round number five, the military encounters of the animal kind. We asked the weirdest wildlife you ever encountered, and the answers, like always, were pretty wild. And all of that today is going to be brought to you by our good friend at Feltman's. Folks, we're talking wieners again. We're talking a little bit of hot dog goofing because Feltman of Coney Island is the world's first hot dog brand. It was established in 1867 and it's a small veteran run business revived in 2015 by Brooklyn brothers, Michael and Joe Quinn, and their late brother, Jimmy, who was killed on 9/11. You might remember Joe Quinn. He was actually on our show. He used to be the CEO of Headstrong, which is the charity that we really love. He's moved on and is doing other things now, and he is part of this hot dog company, which is great. They actually sent us some, which is nice because Kate needed some fucking hot dog help.
I have to tell you, I hadn't seen the email that we were working with Feltman's, and so I had posted this photo of what I called Philly lumber dogs, but these hideous shit hot dogs that I got from the grocery store. And I chopped them up and I put them on this like round bun, and people were like, that's the fucking grossest thing. I tried to eat it. It was one of the nastiest things. So I'm like, damn, dude, because I had gotten all this. I was ready to eat hot dogs. I'm ready for spring. I wanted to be in the zone. So lo and behold, a couple days later, I get this package and I open it up and it's still ice cold. I don't know how they do that either, by the way.
Ice packs.
Yeah, well, I know, but I was just like, holy shit, this thing's still. I open it up, a bunch of Feltman's Coney Island hot dogs. And there are, I gotta tell you, those are some long wieners. You get a good bang.
They're long wieners. They're good wieners. The mustard that comes with it, apple cider vinegar mustard, which is fancy as hell.
So it's so good. It made my day. It was delicious. I still have more left. And Wiener Wednesdays, let's make it a thing. Wiener Wednesdays with Feltman's hot dogs. The entire team that works there, all veterans, they can ship all over the place. And it like genuinely made my day. They're really, really fucking good.
Yeah, combined with their people on there, they have 113 months deployed between their entire team, which is pretty incredible. They're 100% all-natural beef and nitrate and safety vacuum-sealed and plastic to stay fresh up to 60 days in the refrigerator and up to 10 months in the refrigerator. The natural spice of blend of the hot dog makes it possible for any recipe. You could put it in mac and cheese, tacos. They said they're not kidding about that. Jambalaya salad, also not kidding there. And pizza. Let's make quarantine time a little more enjoyable, one hot dog at a time. Go to feltmansofconeyisland.com and enter the code zero for 10% off. That's www.feltmansofconeyisland.com and enter the promo code zero for $10 off. Tag your ZBT and Feltman's experience on Instagram at Feltman's Coney Island. It's the best hot dog that you'll ever have in your life from some of the best people that you'll ever meet, too. They're fantastic folks over there at Feltman's.
Is there anything better than a veteran with a great wiener?
Let's start the show. Well, we're still stuck at home. Kate's losing it a little bit.
She didn't have much to start with.
Yeah, she's spiraling. She even admitted it whenever she logged on today that she's like, I'm at the point now where I'm close to done. I'm done, right? Kate, you doing okay?
Yesterday it started just crazy peals of laughter. Just alone. Just, I'll look over and Spork's looking at me and I'm fucking dying. I'm like, bro, come on. I'm like losing my shit. I don't know.
I need to send you a volleyball so you could just fucking Tom Hanks it and just have Wilson.
Have something. But for sure, I was already weird, but I've like, hit a new plane of weird. I'm kind of excited to see what comes out of my head this week then, I guess.
Yeah.
But it's, yeah, especially if I do a little boozing this weekend, who knows? But,
I picture just full-blown conversations with Spork, where head, he's saying things back to you, and you're having an actual back-and-forth conversation.
Oh, I have a whole song for him now, titled Hello, Mr. Curly Paws, and I sing it to him, like, every morning.
Oh, well, you can't say that.
Yeah, how's it go?
With the squad. Let's hear it.
Hello, Mr. Curly Paws. I love your paws. I love your paws. Hello, Mr.
No, keep it going. I know you're embarrassed. You have a little bit of red hair, but this is good content.
Hello, Mr. Curly Paws. From your big long tail to your sharp little claws. Okay, I'm losing my mind. Anyway, and then throughout the day, I say, hello, Mr. Curly Paws. And
Does he like the nickname?
Because he always has his little paws curled. Oh my God, please help me.
God, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, honestly. You know, for me, and I think this is something I would share with everyone, as long as you give yourself something to look forward to every few days or every week, I think that really helps to maintain a positive mindset and a positive outlook on everything, because that just helps the week progress, helps the days go by, and it moves this time along, because we can't make it any shorter. We just got to make the time enjoyable. So that's what I've been doing.
If you want to hear more about that, wait till you hear about Charlie Plump, 6 years in a prison cell in Hanoi.
Yeah, man, it's all
relative.
The
thing that he talked about quarantine season that he had is unbelievable. What a fascinating dude he is. I can't wait for you guys to hear that interview as well. But we are looking forward to things. Like Khan said, one of the things that I'm looking forward to is just dinner. Like I'm not like a New York City guy where I go out to eat constantly, where you guys eat out damn near every day. Like, you guys are eating or ordering or something like that. We actually cook and shit like that. But on Fridays, after Kate and I would get done with the Chaps and Kate show, one of our family traditions is we go out to eat every Friday night. And I love that, because it's not like my wife is cooking or I'm cooking or we're doing something at home. We're actually getting out. We're having a different meal. There's no stress or anything like that involved. Just going out and sitting down at a restaurant and having like a glass of wine and a nice piece of fish and a little bit of healthy vegetables. Like, that is the type of thing that I'm missing right now.
Well, you know what I've seen that I really love? Families getting creative and doing every Friday night is a different theme. So I've been following this one family that the first Friday night was hibachi. And they did the whole onion where you sweet and you light. Like, he was trying to flip little nuggets to his family and their mouths and stuff like that. And then the next week,
a little onion train.
The next week, one of their teenage sons did his. It was his night, and he did Hooters. So he stuffed his shirt and he printed out and just like stapled it to his shirt like the Hooters logo. And then it was like hot wings, fried pickles. Like, he made his own, you know. So they've been doing different restaurants.
That's a good idea.
It's really fun, wacky thing to do with your family, and like gets creative with it. So I don't know, if you're looking for ideas,
Yeah, I mean, I think just the creativity that people are trying things that they normally wouldn't have tried to do, and, you know, evident by the show that my friends have created and these families who are doing different themes. It's just and don't be afraid to just put on a little fit. Last weekend I put on a nice little outfit up top, and honestly, it changed my mood. And after we were done recording, I stayed in that outfit all night, more or less. Because it just made me feel better to put normal clothes on for a change.
I thought about doing that for church on Sunday, but I don't have that many fancy clothes, and my suit's dirty. So I mean, that's basically it for me. I have one nice outfit, and then that's essentially it. So for the game in round number one, we are going to have a little bit of a dinner party, because we do. Whenever I'm up there in New York, we all like to go out to eat together and hang out and just spend time in person instead of over the computer or whatever. So I do miss going out to eat with my friends, especially when I go up to New York. So we have a table for eight. Where do we want to go, Cons? You pick it out. You pick the restaurant. Fancy Boy Steak Restaurant.
Ooh. Well, I would probably just go with one of my favorites. Well, I'll give you three, and you guys can pick from either Peter Luger's, Smith & Walensky's, or Keen's. I'm actually thinking...
Peter Luger's is the one that I've heard of, and I think that that's a more nationally known one. So
they
we'll
got
go to Peter
chicken
Luger's.
Fingers? They got chicken fingers?
Yeah, they'll have chicken fingers.
All right.
You order chicken fingers at Peter Luger's.
Or at least
Luger's,
they'll have loaded macaroni and cheese, so yeah. You'll be good.
They got Reese's Puffs over there.
Hershey Kisses. Yeah. So we have a table for eight. Three of us are going to go. Me, Kate, and Cons are going to be there. But we also have five other seats to fill, and we could do it with anybody throughout history, and then we are going to vote after. So we'll do a little snake draft around. Cons, will start with you. Who's your first pick that you want to sit with? And by the way, I also want to mention, on the table between the eight of us, we're also going to share 12 bottles of wine at least.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think that's important.
Just a few clarifications. Is this dead or alive? Has to be dead?
Dead or alive. And interpretation's part of the question here.
Okay.
You could do whatever you want to. Interpret it any old way you want.
Okay. So I have nine names on my
list.
No,
you got to do three.
No, I know. I'm deciding. Okay. I'm deciding because these rules
classic
were...
Classic Cons.
No,
save
be quiet.
Fucking round one.
No, be quiet because these rules were presented to me no less than 5 minutes ago. So I just put a bunch of names on
Can
a piece
one
of
the people be a TV show that I just talk about a lot?
All right. Can one of it be a school? Can one of the people be a school?
Can one of them be a really...
Can
a
West
really,
Point be one of my people?
Can pleated dockers be a thing that...
All right, go ahead, Cons.
So when I think about dinner, I want a lively bunch. So I'm looking at my list, and I'm thinking of, there's some people who would probably be interesting, but not necessarily as lively. My first pick is Robin Olds. He's a pilot. He was a fighter pilot ace in World War II and then in Vietnam. He was an Army football player. He was the commandant of the Air Force Academy. Very established, accomplished military career, but also was known to be with his men and to really cut up and enjoy a cocktail. So I think he'd be, with all his stories of fighting in two different wars and all the things he has seen, I think he'd be a great choice.
Okay, Kate, we'll go with you next up.
All right, for me, Rodney Dangerfield.
Okay.
I feel like he would have a lot of good jokes that he
for us. I thought we said military.
No, anybody.
I get no
this
respect.
This game is fucking stupid then. I put on all military people. Why?
Oh, that's on you. Interpretation was part of the question.
You know what's funny?
This is stupid then.
You know what's funny? I thought attention to detail was a military thing, Cons. But I would have Rodney Dangerfield because I feel like he could adjust his jokes for military and we get a kick out of it. I get no respect at all. When I was a PFC, I lost my unit in the field. I asked the gunny to help me find them. He said, "I don't know, kid. There's so many places they could hide." I get no respect. You know, I feel like he could really just, we'd be rolling.
Yeah, that's a good one, Kate. I would go with, my first one would be Teddy Roosevelt. I would love to hear tales of him going to Cuba, all the Rough Rider shit, like all of his time going out and establishing the national parks. I think that would be a wonderful person to hang out with. Imagine the stories that old Teddy would have.
Ooh, you know who I would love to have in a room
No, you can't add on other people, Kate.
Well,
respect the game.
But who is the rapper from the Rough Riders?
Oh, DMX.
Wouldn't you love to see DMX?
It depends. I would only have DMX and Teddy Roosevelt together if it was Christmas season and DMX could give us his rendition of Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, because that's actually the best. If you haven't heard it, let's pump that in. Here it is.
I just would love to see DMX be explaining to Teddy Roosevelt why he picked Rough Riders, and like, I don't know. It's fun to think about.
Well, I love Rough Riders. Yeah. I saw what you did with James Weir when you were going to the Grand Canyon, and I loved it. So we got these four-wheelers and got on top, and they have big rims. They won't stop.
Perfect.
That was pretty good, DMX.
That was really DMX.
Well done.
All right, go ahead, Cons. Who's your second person at the table?
I think I got to go Patton, just because he's well known to have liked the finer things in life, so he's going to appreciate a nice dinner, and he's going to pick out some great wines for us. Plus,
Patton Oswalt?
No, General George Patton.
Okay.
Wasn't he, like, no offense to his service, but wasn't he a little batshit crazy and backstabbing?
Yeah, but who cares? Like, that's got...
That's a good story.
He's got stories for days.
That's why we had the 12 bottles of wine. That's true. A key component is that you want to get the fucking tea. This is a dinner where we want to get the tea. That's why we have the 12 bottles of wine out.
All right. That's
Pad's a good one. Kate, who you got next?
All right. Specifically for whatever Cons would be wearing, I'm bringing in Joan Rivers. She's got so many good one-liners, and I feel like you have a general at the table. You have a famous person. You have a historical person. She is going to find a way to roast you in a way that makes the rest of the table laugh, and she don't give a fuck who you are. Big time
so
fan of
hers. All the people in history, Joan Rivers is who you want to talk
honest
to.
God, she's one of my honest to God heroes and idols. Like, truly.
Really?
Yep.
Why?
Always has been. She started later in life in comedy, later in life, and it was one of the things I looked at when I was slow. I got out of the military. I'm like, I'm too old now. I can't do these things. And then stories like hers, it's like, no, she was already a mother. She was in her, like, I think early 40s or some shit, and she said, fuck it, I'm gonna do it. She did it. Also, she was just so fearless and did, like, zero fucks given for a woman during her time in a thing dominated by men. That's like being a woman in the military, kind of, and like finding ways to jab at people and be funny to make your way. I don't know, I just always really admired her and thought she was a bad bitch. Also, I love the way she roasts people.
Well, now I feel bad for kind of making fun of that pick.
No, she also had a huge, in her New York City apartment, she had a huge filing cabinet. She alphabetized every single joke that she ever did under topic. If it was a joke about butts, it was under B, and you could open the filing cabinet and go through and read her joke. So,
how much would you love to have access to that filing cabinet?
I would give anything to have it, yeah. So if you guys want to buy it for me, I don't know where it is.
Here's my Joan Rivers story. I was at JFK Airport one time, and they come up, I see Joan Rivers, and she's standing in line at security, and they come up, and they're like, Miss Rivers, you know, we'll just take you ahead. And she's like, No, that's fine. I don't deserve any, you know, special treatment. She just stood in line with everybody else.
Queen.
That is a queen move. My second one would be Frank Sinatra.
Ooh. I think
loving having Frank tell some stories. He's a great storyteller anyway. Handsome. I could get lost in those blues any day of the week.
I bet he and I bet I could get him to do a little cocaine in the bathroom.
Oh, yeah. You guys definitely...
Just kidding.
Some fucking nose beers with old Frank Sinatra.
I need Frank to pull the governor off the stories about JFK, too. I need
that's
everything.
Why we have the wine, Kate. We're getting everybody liquored up.
The mafia?
Liquored up I got liquored up Teddy Roosevelt and liquored up Frank Sinatra so far. Yeah.
His mafia ties, his government ties, all that shit.
You need the scoop on Mickey Mantle if you like sports. You get the scoop on Marilyn Monroe, Grace
old
Kelly, all of them.
Mm-mm.
The whole squad, yeah. All right, third, who you got, Cons?
Well, you know, I don't like this game as much as I thought I was going to, because I would have thought about this very drastically differently had I known we were to go with anyone. But anyway, I'm going to go with General Joseph Hooker from the Civil War because he was known to be a rowdy dude who liked to drink, liked to gamble. So I think if we get enough wine in him, he'll do something crazy, maybe dance on the table, who knows. But I think he would be a good choice.
Okay. Kate?
I'm gonna pick one that would be tough for you guys to vote off here in a power move.
Jesus.
I'm gonna one up you. God. Whoever everyone's omnipotent being is in the spirit world, that's who I'm having at dinner. She's gonna pay for dinner, probably. Mm. And probably grant at least 3 wishes for each of us at the end of the meal. And I feel like we could be like, so, how did the dinosaurs go? I feel like we could ask all the questions we always wanted to know. And then that would be a treat.
That would be a fucking annoying, though, honestly.
I think that's a terrible choice.
Yeah, that's a terrible choice. I think that one's automatically going to be out. Nobody wants to go eat, and you want to go get boozed up with God? Come on, you get judged on that?
No. My God's parties. My God's fucking cool shit.
I like to imagine my God at dinner table at Peter Ruger's just absolutely housing the free bread.
Exactly.
I like to picture my God.
Slow down,
just like,
God. You're going to get full on the appetizers. We still got all kinds of stuff coming.
I like to picture my God just hammered drunk, and he takes his shirt off and starts singing show tunes.
I want my steak tartare.
You guys are laughing. That's exactly how I picture my God. So good luck voting her off because she's going to crush it.
Yeah. All right. Well, my third one is Abigail Adams. Much for the reason.
What?
I'm waiting
to hear this answer.
Okay.
I mean, think about what Abigail Adams. She is the wife and the chief political advisor for one of the first presidents. She also is the mother for one of the presidents. She was around all the founding fathers doing behind the scenes shit constantly. She was super woke for her days, like one of the very early American feminist icons. She was awesome. And she is by and large known as one of the smartest people, if not the smartest, of all the original founding fathers and founders of the country. She is a legend. I would love to get Abigail to spill the tea.
But I feel like it would be cool in the beginning. But then five glasses of wine deep, I can see her looking at us in disgust and being
I disagree. I think she would be like to be around other people like Frank and Teddy that have different stories to tell, because I imagine she would get into it. Imagine what shit talk she would do about Benjamin Franklin, old syphilis having ass. I think that she would just go to town on roasting them.
Don't you dare.
Yeah. I know you like him because he's from Philly, but it's syphilis.
Sorry, Ben Franklin fucked.
Go to Koala Bears, I think. All right, so let's break it down. So just we have Cons had the Air Force Commandant, George Patton, and General Hooker. Of those people, who do you want to be at our dinner party, Kate?
Boy, I'm going to go ahead and do a power move and vote all three of Cons people up. you'd think a hooker would be fun at a party, but I'm going to say in this case, actually, you know what? I'll throw you a bone here. I'm going to take...
Kate, it's okay because your answer is really pretty crummy, so I'm not going to vote for any of your people either. So
okay,
good.
Good. Yours are all voted off.
All right, so Kate's voted off all of Cons. Cons of Kate and mine, who would you like to stick around?
Oh, definitely Sinatra. He's got a ticket.
All right, so we'll pencil in Sinatra. Is that okay with you, Kate?
Yes, I accept.
Sinatra is one. All right, anybody else? Kate, who else from my list would you pick?
You had Sinatra, Abigail, and what's the other one?
And Roosevelt.
Roosevelt. Fuck, those are three good ones.
No, they're not. They're not. I'm legitimately angry at you two.
You know what? I'm also voting off Roosevelt because I feel like we have his books. We know enough about him that I get the gist of him. I'm good.
Okay, so you're cool with Abigail Adams?
Yep, she's in.
Okay. For Kate's, I don't want any of Kate's.
You are full of shit.
You know what?
I don't. I swear to God, I don't. I don't care. Rodney Dangerfield, I think, is the most overrated.
I think he would. I think he would get so annoying. He'd get drunk and
especially liquored up. Yeah. Like, oh, I get no respect. I don't think
he's one-liners.
He's already that annoying guy that repeats his jokes.
Yeah, I don't think one-liners are that funny. The only person who's ever done one-liners that were good were Mitch Hedberg. And
true. Oh my God.
Yeah, Rodney Dangerfield overrated.
I wouldn't mind Joan Rivers, just because I think Joan Rivers is my closest one on Kate's list, because I think she would absolutely – Frank Sinatra would be in there feeling himself like he always is, and I think Joan Rivers could take him down a peg, and I wouldn't mind seeing that. Joan Rivers busting Frank Sinatra's balls would be good.
They also probably know the same celebs and could probably they could probably both be in cahoots on shit too.
Here's someone who knows better than Joan Rivers and was one of Frank's buddies, but Jerry Weintraub. He would be a good choice for this dinner.
I told you to read his book.
I read his book before you told me to read it.
No, I died. I'm the one.
All right. So I think I will agree to George Patton. I think George Patton could come on. Now we have two spots to fill. We have Teddy Roosevelt, We have the Air Force Commandant, General Hooker, Rodney Dangerfield, and God that are still available to join us for this.
I'm telling you, Robin Olds. Robin Olds would be a good choice.
Patton's the guy who
that's
gets
the
too
pilot
drunk.
From World War II?
Yeah, from the World War. Yeah, also, well, I should probably not say this, but he was also an Army football player, an All-American in the College Football Hall of Fame.
Oh, then he's out. Sorry.
Oh, yeah, gotta be out there.
For sure. Sorry.
That's fine. Yeah. Then take Patton. Patton's probably got.
We already got Patton right. on there.
I think we got.
I think we gotta have fucking Teddy on the list too.
No,
Teddy
dude.
Would,
oh,
you would
oh,
love Teddy still. You're
crazy
just saying
is
that
it?
Because you wouldn't want to.
How weird is it? I'll keep talking over you all day. Okay. How weird is it that, oddly enough, Chaps' three are the magic ones that are all great? Wow, that's weird.
Well, yeah. I picked good ones.
No, because you know what? I just, you know, we're a military show. We said, let's make dinner. I thought we were picking military figures. I would have thought about this game completely different.
Okay, well, then I'm going to add some people just so we can move on to round two. I'm adding PFC Winter to the list, the one who I made who had to drink too much Dr. Pepper. He's going to come because he deserves it. And we are going to have Medium Reg Greg is going to join us at the dinner. It's going to be the dinner that we're going to have is going to be Frank Sinatra, Abigail Adams, myself, Kate Kahns, General Patton, PFC Winter, and Medium Red Greg.
So none of my guys? I don't get Joan Rivers even?
I'm going to tell you right now, I'm not coming to this dinner.
Me neither. I'm having my own dinner. I'm having my own dinner with my own guests.
This dinner's
good. You guys can leave, and I'll bring on Teddy. Teddy can come, and if you guys leave, I'll bring God, I guess.
Enjoy your snooze fest shithole dinner.
Oh,
all right.
Man.
That didn't go as planned.
No.
Let's move on to round two.
I don't even want to do the rest of the show now. I hate you both.
All right, so this week, for round number two, this week, one of the main topics of conversation still, same topic of conversation last week, is haircuts across the military, and very specifically the Marine Corps. Task and Purpose had a video that was leaked to them, I guess, that they put out, and on April 5th, there were still Marines waiting at the fucking barbershop.
Nut
on
to butt.
Camp in, yeah, nut to butt at Camp Pendleton, waiting to get their haircuts. Not only that, but I have Marines that I knew from whenever I was in that are still texting me like, dude, you got to stay on top of the haircut thing. They're being crazy about it. And one of the main reasons why I think that this is happening is because high-level general officers and the Secretary of Defense and the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff are making this a local decision. They're letting local commanders have discretion of how they want to do this. I think that's the biggest mistake. I think whenever you're having an issue that is a global issue, you have to step up and be like, I'm going to lead. This is the command policy. This is what we're going to do. There is no questions about it. I don't care if you're in Djibouti, Africa. I don't care if you're in Australia. We are going to relax the grooming standard for a period of 1 month right now. And I might extend it. That's what I think they have to do.
Yeah.
That video leaked and it became like a big deal. It like made the news. It was making the Marine Corps look bad. So at a live press conference where both the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff and Secretary of Defense, they were both at this meeting. They're both at separate podiums next to each other. And this reporter, I believe it was Jeff Skogel at Task and Purpose, was like, hey, what's going on with this? Is it mission essential to have these haircuts? And
he addressed that question to the Secretary of Defense.
Right, to the Secretary of Defense. And he was like, this is definitely going to be addressed. The Commandant of the Marine Corps, General David Berger, is going to get a phone call from Millie. And then Millie was like, oh, girlfriend, no. And I think that was his exact words. No,
that wasn't even close to that words or really what happened. So the Secretary of Defense was standing there and he got a question and he said, yes, it's about the safety and preservation of our troops. That is the main purpose of what we're doing right now. So if we have to relax the standard a little bit, we'll do that. General Milley comes in over the top whenever Secretary of Defense says, and he like kind of steps into the podium a little bit and he's like, don't take that as guidance. That's not guidance. We need to hold off. Don't take that as guidance.
And then the whole room was like, oh no, he did it. Oh.
Right. And so to basically, if you're a civilian listener, you don't understand like the chain of command, essentially the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, by and large, kind of I mean, there is some leeway in it, but the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff reports to the Secretary of Defense, because the Secretary of Defense is the civilian placed in charge and appointed and confirmed by the United States Senate to be in charge of the entire Department of Defense, which the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff obviously falls into. Now, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, his direct supervisor is the president, because it's that's how the chain of command goes. Mm-hmm. But the Secretary of Defense is in charge of defense policy. When General Miley goes over the top and says, that's not guidance yet, it kind of is saying to your boss, like, actually, what you just said is wrong. Cons, we kind of disagreed. What's your perspective on what the Secretary of Defense should have done there?
Well, I think what he did was correct. I don't think at that point you try to get in a pissing match with your subordinate in that public of a forum. You can pull him aside afterwards and address it there. I think they dropped the ball by not being aligned prior to going into that meeting on how they were going to handle that topic, because obviously they had to have known that that topic potentially could have come up. So I just don't advocate for having disagreements within the chain of command in public forums.
Yeah, I do agree with that, but I think once the junior person, in this case General Miley, which called the chairman of Joint Chiefs of Staff.
Jaron Milley or General Miley?
Milley.
So whenever he comes in over the top to the Secretary of Defense, I think that you kind of have to correct the record there and be like, General, I'll get up with you about my guidance and how we're going to go forward after the meeting type of thing. At least a small correction, because you can't have subordinates in that briefing room challenging you on something that you just said.
No, I agree with that. I agree with that. I didn't want it to see it devolve into like a full-blown back and forth is what I'm saying.
Right, or we can work together on the language or the written language, because that's one of the strangest things about this administration and what's going on now is that several times there's been times where either the president's tweeted, the Secretary of Defense when it was Mattis, or now when it's Esper, where they've made statements and it didn't come into fruition as far as written orders go. It's strange, right? Like at that level of government, at that level of leadership, that you're requiring people only to listen to those things that are written, because that's not the way the real military works. A spoken or a written order are the same fucking thing.
Yeah, an order is an order.
Yeah. I think that part of it is crazy. Like you could kind of get around it there, but even having the Secretary of Defense saying we're going to relax it and then the chairman saying no, we're not, kind of a weird move.
Drama. I was hoping it would come to fisticuffs. I feel like what our country needs right now is a good old fashioned haymaker.
Oh
right,
yeah,
that would be
nice.
And I feel like that's what we're fucking. I'll be honest, I'm hungry for it.
Yeah,
Esper would get his ass whooped.
Yeah, he looked like I don't know, but
he's got reach. He's got reach.
Yeah, I just think it was one of those things too, where you know, Millie is 6 years older than Esper, I believe, and it's just a little tough to swallow sometimes when someone above you is 6 years younger than you.
Oh yeah.
And he just like didn't want to be shown up in that in that conference. Like, oh, he's telling me what to do, when in fact, like, it's my decision on what the haircut standards are going to be.
Yeah. I would like to see him do the Millie rock too, but yeah. I would like to see him do a lot of things, but
his tangent on how he mentioned his father and talking about Iwo Jima, I thought that was a wild tangent to equate haircuts to how we perform in combat. I understand why haircuts are in place and why we have standards, but when something like this that is currently going on in our country is such a serious matter, I think that supersedes what previous guidance should have been.
I think overall what we're at right now as a government is that we are in like a 2-minute drill for football, like terminology, where there's so many things going on where you have to make instant decisions on the field. You're not going back and you're not huddling up. But sometimes even in a 2-minute drill, you have to take a timeout, get back together, get the troops back together, get your brains in the same spot. Mm-hmm. The CNO is floating out to the media that they might put Captain Crozier back in charge of the USS Roosevelt. Just get on the same fucking page, mm-hmm. folks. Like, that's what troops need. You need solid leadership from the top down that speak with one mind and one authority, and you need to have appropriate commander's intent and a way to deliver that and a way to deliver it effectively. We don't have that right now. They need to find it back, because the news around the DOD is fucking embarrassing.
Yeah.
It's wild. I have a couple other notes from around the military right now, too. A couple other quick Corona notes while we're kind of on the topic of it. The Wuhan seafood markets. Have you guys been hearing the theory that because the Wuhan Virology Center, like where they make all the diseases and stuff, their laboratory was near it, the conspiracy was like they leaked, China leaked the disease, and they knew it was going to fuck up our world, and so they did it on purpose and blah, blah, blah. Well, new evidence from our scientists are suggesting not the case. They say it was definitely probably from an animal coming over to people, so they don't think it was like an on-purpose thing.
Well, there's very much two schools of thought on that.
Oh, too. For sure, yeah. But a new study that came out said the genetic makeup of it reveals that it is not a mishmash of known viruses that would be expected if it were human-made. So it has unusual features that have only recently been identified in scaly anteaters called pangolins.
Those things are so cute.
They're so cute, so who knows? It could be that. And then Zoom, you know, we're all having Zoom meetups. We're all hanging out with each other. It is now off-limit to troops. The popular free video conferencing application is now officially banned by the DOD for important personnel meetings because it's Zoom bombing. It happened to us a couple times.
Yeah.
I tweeted out, hey, join me and Pat, my coworker, Barstow Pat, join us on Zoom, blah, blah, blah. Right away, as tons of people joined, somebody took it over and they literally drew a giant swastika across our meeting. It was really like, holy fuck, we had to cancel out of it right away. We tried to restart a new one. It happened all over again. People can get into your meetings, take them over, see everything you're doing, see the private chat, everything. So having any kind of important meetings, now definitely off. Sorry to the TikTokers and Zoomers of the military out there. And then finally, the travel ban has been extended yet again. It's now past May 11th. So just thinking of everybody kind of fucked by that.
You're stuck on TDY.
Oh my God. There's so many stories of people. And one of the Marines who wrote into the Military Times said, we hear nothing but rumors from all levels of chain of command. Rumors passed from Marines and sailors and illegitimate and outrageous and blah, blah, blah. So it's like, again, like you said, people got to, the higher ups got to figure out like an exact thing because lower levels are losing their minds. And then NCIS issuing warnings. A lot of troops now are getting, people are trying to catfish them saying, here, this is Navy Federal. Fill out your information to get your check to help you out. Definitely not them. Don't listen to it. And then finally, I went to the NCIS, which is funny to me. Their Twitter is @RealNCIS because there's so many other TV shows and shit that they have to be like @Real. But the one right below it, have you noticed or received creepy texts from an unknown number? Watch out for scams sending mutilated bodies scaring you into paying money. Troops have been getting sent photos of mutilated bodies the last couple weeks saying like, I don't know, like threatening them, a kind of thing to send money. So also, let somebody know. Let real NCIS know if that happens to you. Because
I'm kind of surprised NCIS didn't have that website to begin with before all the shows came about. They didn't have that domain. Right? That's kind of weird.
Yeah. Somebody else had taken it over.
Got to trademark that.
Real quick, though, to circle back on the haircuts, though, I can't think about this situation and not think of Allen Iverson. And it's just like, we're talking about haircuts.
Right.
Haircuts. Yeah. Not wars. Haircuts.
Haircuts. That's
See, and
perfect.
I like to think back of where I would be, and I think I want to be on the right side of history. I wouldn't have been. I'd have been like, motherfuckers, you better cut your goddamn hair.
No, but Chaps, all right, so if you're going to be like that, we've said, then fine, just shave your head. If you're that if you're that ate up about it, then just shave your head. Then you can be within the standard that way.
Also, I'm so pissed at our like political people's advisors in a lot of ways. How in the world do you let Nancy Pelosi go on one of the night shows whenever people in her district are dying of coronavirus and just goofing and saying, look at all this ice cream I got in my huge house? How do you do that? Like, I don't understand. It's people on both political parties doing the dumbest shit. The senator from Texas, John Cornyn, like right whenever the outbreak is really starting to happen in New York, he's like, still go out, have a Corona. I'm having a Corona at a bar right now. Yeah. How do your advisors say this is a good idea? Because you know they aren't just tweeting themselves.
I saw this great tweet where somebody was like, I used to think it'd be great to see celebrities like on our level. And now that I see them all trying to be on our level like the rest of us, I just want them to go back
singing
to being fancy
Imagine
celebrities.
While they have fucking donkeys in their jacuzzi. Get out of here, Arnold Schwarzenegger. Of course you can self-quarantine. You're in a 50 million square foot
house. You live in a small town.
You're married to one of the Kennedys.
Yeah.
Final things. One hilarious video that we didn't want to post, but we were sent a video of a huge, long police call line of Marines holding 550 cord, all holding one long 550 cord, like those little kids you see in the city when the preschool goes out and they're all holding onto the rope. And so they all had to hold the string.
Wait, we didn't send that out?
I don't think we were.
Afraid that's getting put out.
No,
for sure.
We were afraid the Marine would get in trouble because.
Well, we need to put emojis. That thing is going out bigly.
It was hilarious.
That one's definitely going out. So be on the lookout for that.
Finally, question for you guys from the listeners on this whole coronavirus final thing of this round. One of our listeners, Mr. BROE, said, "Is this the best time in history to go to boot camp? You won't miss out on any sports. And you can't go anywhere anyway. So you're
You're not supposed to touch your face.
You're not supposed to touch your face. So you're really not missing out on all the things that give recruits FOMO when they're in boot camp. They know their buddies aren't going out and hanging out right now. They know there's no sports they're missing. Could this be the best time?
You know, the drill instructor is not going to scream in your face.
Yeah. So,
screaming at somebody from 6 feet away is not intimidating.
So, yeah, that just doesn't do it for me. I would not have a problem at all getting screamed at 6 feet away.
Right. It's that. And then somebody said, no, the best time to go is when your drill instructor is on their last round.
That's bullshit. Right now is. If you want to go, go now. That's the time
to go.
Join
the military.
Speaking of going, we're going to go into round number three. A little penis goofing because this one comes to us from TJ Maxx. I was actually talking to my wife earlier today. Maybe it was yesterday. And we were talking just like on – we mentioned it before we started that – not going out for a lot of us that are very fortunate enough to keep our jobs, unlike a lot of people, we know that too. So I'm going to do a little goof in here with knowing that people are losing their jobs and shit. We aren't going out. You're not spending money on Ubers. You're not spending money on frivolous shit. You're just kind of going, like buying food and things like that. You're not going out nearly as much as you are. She really missed going to TJ Maxx just to like look around and just like actually shopping and touching things and being out of your house. I think that's what happened with this Air Force fellow, right?
Well, so he's finally now caught in charge, but he did this about a month ago. But it's from Diana Stancy Carell at the Military Times, and the photo of this guy, my goodness. A Hulbert Field airman who allegedly exposed himself to a woman at a Florida TJ Maxx store last month was arrested on Friday and charged with indecent exposure. Airman First Class Leary, age 20, followed, and this is creepy and this sucks, but he followed and watched this woman through various areas of the Fort Walton Beach store. He was following her around the store. And as she turned the corner to the kitchen section, she found Leary kneeling on the floor with his pants down in the store's second aisle. Like, she turns the corner and there he is on his knees with his dick out. The defendant had pulled down his pants, had his genitalia fully exposed. The victim left the kitchen area and notified an employee who contacted law enforcement. He's since been charged with indecent exposure. And this is one of those times where, like, no, I don't think doing that to him was funny. But I also cannot help but think of his command, everybody's hunkered down. It's been a month since this happened. They have no idea. Yeah, we have one of your airmen that we believe pulled his dick out in the kitchen aisle of a TJ Maxx. What?
Like, and doing it in Fort Walton, that's kind of like the area that I'm from where I went to high school. That's like a country area. Man, if some old country fella comes across you and you're hands and knees and you're showing somebody your dick, you will get the shit kicked out of you. Like that, beside the fact of being like super creepy and rapey, surprised you didn't catch a fucking beating in the TJ Maxx.
Very surprised, especially with all those big ladle spoons around. You feeling the pots and pans?
Oh, yeah.
Dangerous.
Cast iron is cheap as hell there. It's like $12.99.
Indeed, but I feel like it's just like a weird ambush. I on the subway station a couple times now. I feel like in New York City, you just become blind to dicks after a while. There's been times walking to work. There was a guy repeatedly, he lays on his side with his back to our building with his dick out, like touching the sidewalk, and he just pees hands free. And you just step over the pee stream, you're like, good morning, Tom. And it's like nothing to you after a while. And then another time I turned, I'm like on the subway platform of the 4 train, and I look over because I see the guy next to me's arm moving, and he's just jerking his dick off, and I felt nothing. I was like, hello. Like, nice watch.
In that case, people in New York City, they're just numb to what's going on around them. Yeah, they're just... Well, I'm just talking about the people, they have no remorse about doing that too. I wonder if when he was arrested, if he was given any sort of blood or urine test, because there's a good chance you're high on something, I think, if you're doing this.
If you're
willing to like get to that part of your brain where you think it's okay to expose yourself in public, I don't think there's something wrong going on inside of you to get to that point.
Also,
I agree.
Horrible cover and concealment there by the airmen. Now, who trained this guy? Just right out in the middle of the aisle? Come on.
Louis C.K. training.
Disguise yourself. Yeah, just disguise yourself a little bit. But also, I thought Air Force was the fanciest branch. I thought he would have done this in a Macy's. So I was shocked. I saw this headline and I was like, of course it's in a Florida fucking TJ Maxx of all places. Just random. Whoever's command.
Better than a Ross, I will say that.
That's true. That's true. I'm sorry. That's where the Army's going to pull their dicks out.
All right, let's move on to round number four, which is going to be a prisoner of war.
Weird transition here.
Yeah, weird transition. We have Charlie Plum. And Charlie, I talk about it a little bit. His Instagram account is unbelievable if you need a little motivation, because what he's gone through and where he's at in his life is nothing short of inspiring. I got tagged in one of the videos. Checked him out. I had never really heard his story before. Went and watched a couple of videos. Immediately reached out and was like, please come on the show. He was happy to do it. Here he is, Charlie Plum. Now on Zero Block 30, we are privileged to have Captain Charles Plum. He graduated from the Naval Academy in Annapolis, Maryland in 1964. And then he went on to become a fighter pilot, where he was one of actually the first fighter pilots ever at Top Gun. I'm sure you've heard of it somewhere before. He went on to Vietnam after that and flew 74 combat missions before he was shot down over Vietnam. And then he became a prisoner of war for 6 years. That is burying the lead, is what we would call that in the media world. But I am so happy and privileged to have Charles Plum on the show. Charles, thanks for joining us.
Great to be with you, chaps. And Katie?
Yes, thanks so much.
So I wanted to have you on the show because I think that of anyone who understands what the world is kind of going through in isolation and spending time alone, it's somebody that has your story. And it's your story has really touched me. I'm sure you never thought that it would correlate to people in everyday American life whenever you were going through everything.
I really didn't. But in fact, the more I look at it, the more I see the correlation. You know, we are at war. You know, we're facing an enemy that we can't see, that we can't predict. Our enemy seems to be everywhere and nowhere, this virus. And, you know, kind of like the Viet Cong and in your war as well, you know, you can't see those guys. And so we're faced with that, with that war that's going on right now. Good news is I think that we've got a good leadership and we've got lots of fine people that are fighting the war. So.
And whenever you were there, we talk a lot about with Afghanistan and Iraq, like whenever you get close to the end of your tour, because I actually want to talk about some of the things that led up. After you did 74 combat missions and you had over 100 carrier landings, whenever that's going on, getting closer to the end of your deployment, your time, were you thinking about just going home? Did you have that view that I'm almost there? I've almost reached the end of my tunnel?
I certainly did. And, you know, the other guys did too. And in fact, I heard that some of the Air Force fighter pilots that actually would stop them from flying the last 10 days or so, because you really get that get home itis and you start making mistakes. And, you know, I'll never forget that the last flight that I was on, my 75th mission, and I'm looking at this this armada of airplanes with big, big strike, 3 aircraft carriers, 5 Air Force bases, I don't know how many hundred airplanes. And I could just see airplanes from horizon to horizon. And I felt to myself, how lucky I am, you know. I've survived 74 missions. I've hassled with the MiGs. I've taken hits from AAA and missiles, and I'm still alive, and I'm going home. And, you know, I look back to those few minutes when that missile hit and think to myself, I wonder if I just didn't get a little too complacent. So.
And do you ever, I know because whenever I got shot, I put a lot of the blame on myself and did a lot of Monday morning quarterbacking. I imagine for somebody in your position, whenever, and I watched a speech that you gave in 2012, I believe it was, when you had on really hard-nosed shoes and you made it a point to walk 3 paces one way and 3 paces another way. I imagine you Monday morning quarterbacked in your brain while you were taking those 3 paces in your 8-foot cell over and over and over again.
You're very perceptive. That's exactly what was happening. And I felt very ashamed and very guilty at what I had done. And, you know, to the point that I just really wondered if I could ever come back to the States and face my fellow fighter pilots when I had just failed in my mission. And yeah, I certainly did. I beat myself up pretty good about that.
And going through and spending time there, was there ever a time whenever you were there, because I also saw, and you've written a lot about it as well, where you talk about having a positive mental attitude oftentimes was a killer for prisoners of war.
You know, it was. I think the actual secret was to keep it real, okay? Because you can positively think yourself right out of reality. And so it was a balance for me. Now, Jim Stockdale was our leader for a while. He was the commander of the air group, and he was shot down. And so he was the senior POW for a while. And he's quoted in a couple of books about saying it was the optimists that died in the prison. And in fact, and I approached him on that when I was still alive, because I was very optimistic, you know. Mm-hmm. I think it had a little bit to do with my age. You know, I was one of the youngest guys there, so I was optimistic. But what Admiral Stockdale and I finally decided upon, what it wasn't necessarily optimism or pessimism, it was realism. Mm-hmm. And his whole approach to leadership was, hey, I'm going to tell you the truth. You know, we're in trouble. This is going to be difficult. You're going to see some pain through this. But also, I'm going to tell you the truth, is we have an opportunity here. We are still warriors. We are still serving. We're not on the defensive. You know, pull up your big boy pants. Let's get on with this thing. And that was his whole approach and his whole attitude. It turned the whole thing around.
And going through something like that, I've read stories about prisoners of war from Vietnam, learning to tap on the wall to develop a sense of communication. How long did that take for you to be able to feel like I'm making any type of communication?
Well, it was difficult because of very cumbersome code. And I was still in solitary confinement. I heard this noise in the corner of my prison cell, and I thought it was a cricket. It was a wire scratching on the concrete floor and had a note wrapped around the end of it with this code. The code was various numbers of tugs on a wire to represent various letters of the alphabet or abbreviations. And so I memorized the code, I ate the note, and began to communicate, but it was really slow for a long time. But we found that communication was absolutely vital, life-saving. You know, it was truly the difference in life or death. The guys that were put in a far corner of a prison camp and couldn't or wouldn't communicate with the rest of the guys probably weren't going to make it. It was just that serious. And the key was, it wasn't the information we were passing around. It was just the simple validation of another human being. Because in those prison cells, when it was dark and you were alone in solitary, you know, you'd lose track. You wouldn't know if you were alive or dead. No feedback, no sounding board. And the simple tugging on a wire or tapping on a wall and have somebody tap back at you meant, you know, number one, hey, somebody's responding to something I am doing physically, thus I exist. And number two, somebody cares. And it was just that comfort, you know, that we got from that communication, that validation that really saved our lives.
Well, that had to be those little tiny moments, I would imagine, of any positivity at all are extremely amplified in conditions like that. I feel almost silly asking this, were there any moments of happiness and joy that you remember from that long span of time?
Absolutely. You know, I remember laughing until my stomach ached at some of the things that we did for each other. You know, every holiday we celebrated, every birthday, we'd have these wild birthday parties where, you know, we would have an orchestra and great meals and a big birthday cake shaped like an aircraft carrier where naked ladies jumped out of the flight deck. You know? and it was all, in our imagination. It was all, the guys next door were throwing this birthday party for me, and it was all tapping on the wall with this code. So the birthday party lasted all day, but boy, was it fun.
Wow. That is unbelievable. And I 6 years is so difficult to wrap my head around. Like, I trying to think of what 6 years in that would be. Looking back for you all these years later, is it kind of like a dot on the line, or do you have really expansive memories?
No, it's, well, I guess to tell you the truth, both. You know, I'm a motivational speaker. I make a living telling this story, and I've made over 5,000 presentations in the last 47 years. And so I relive this story several times a week, but I pick out the positive parts of it, because there's lots and lots of parts, positive parts, you know, of any challenge in life. And one of my bylines is adversity is a horrible thing to waste, because we learn from challenges like this. And I know that you are really concerned about PTSD and that you work a lot with that. Well, here's a statistic you might not know. A study was done about 5 years ago. Of all the combatants of Vietnam, 30.6% have PTSD. Of the prisoners of war, 4% of us have PTSD. And the psychologists and psychiatrists are trying to figure this out, because, you know, you would think that 6 years in a prison camp would be about as much stress as a guy would want to take. And, you know, why would you not have PTSD symptoms because of that? Well, because we've done really well. From 591 men, we've got 17 generals and 7 admirals. Most of us retired as senior grade military officers. We went back to flying airplanes. I still fly airplanes today, and commanding ships and fleets and all over the world.
And I don't mean to cut you off, but I think that's so important. Like, being a captain, whenever I read your story and seeing you got there to Vietnam and captured at 24 years old, weren't released until 30. To me, the concept of staying in the Navy after you return is so foreign from where I believe my brain would be at, and that you continued to serve and went on to lead an entire carrier just absolutely blew my mind. And from your bio, why did you want, I wouldn't want to put on the uniform again.
I'm thinking of last year when I tried rollerblading and fell, and I was like, I'm never rollerblading again.
You know, that's really a good question, a good point. But most of us, most of the POWs in Vietnam came back and stayed in the military. You know, I don't know, why does anybody stay in the military? You know, why do Marines go back into the fight? You know, you went back, Katie. Apparently. So it's the dedication you have. You find something you can do, a way that you can serve, and you have a purpose, you know, a purpose in life. And I came back. I married my high school sweetheart the day after I graduated from Annapolis. She hung on for 5 years, then filed for divorce 3 months before I came home. Oh, man. And so that was, you know, another gut punch. I had survived, you know, nearly 6 years in a prison camp, and I'm thinking to myself, I'm going to survive this too. And so one of the places where I was felt most comfortable was back in uniform, back flying airplanes. And so I went back to flying jets, and it worked. I'm remarried and have 4 kids and 4 grandkids, and live a very happy life.
And I think that I love your Instagram account too, because whenever I saw some of your videos, you talk about how you're in the hangar, and I just assumed that because you're a pilot Navy guy, you called like your man cave your hangar. No, you have like an actual plane in there.
I do.
not a bad stunt to have your own plane. I love that. So I know that you have a very special relationship with John McCain. Can you tell us what he meant to you?
John was my flight instructor in Meridian, Mississippi. He taught me to fly jets. A tough, tough instructor, but he wanted all of us, you know, to learn the craft, and we did. And then he showed up 5 months later than I. He was shot down 5 months after I was, and of course I was one of the first guys to recognize him and communicate with John McCain. Well, he turned out to be one of the toughest guys in that prison camp. He had 7 broken bones when he was shot down, and they were twisting his broken bones to torture the poor guy. But he was just as tough as nails. Anytime there was any interruption in the camp agenda, you knew who was behind it. You know, McCain was always causing trouble, just a maverick. And so, yes, have a lot of respect for John. I don't agree with all of his politics, but in fact, I helped bury him here last year in Annapolis in the cemetery there.
So when you heard stories that would float out there about John McCain and about, like, there's nicknames for him being Songbird, which I always thought was such trash that people would do that to him. What were your thoughts of being somebody that was there with John McCain?
Well, John's not perfect, like most of the rest of us. I got a call from Anderson Cooper when Trump said that McCain was not a hero. Remember that mm-hmm. little
yes.
episode? And Anderson asked me, and I was live on his TV show, what do you think about Trump saying McCain's not a hero? My response was, hey, McCain doesn't call himself a hero. You will not find very many military guys that will accept that moniker. In fact, the name of my book is I'm No Hero. That's just kind of the whole point. And so I said, it's kind of a moot point. You know, McCain's not going to argue the fact that he's not a hero because he doesn't think he is one. Well, John McCain had a lot of faults, and as we all do, and there were, you know, a lot of reasons, I think, why somebody wouldn't think that he was a hero. But, oh, by the way, as I say, he was certainly a hero of mine and one of the toughest guys I ever met.
Oh, I imagine so. The things that he went through and that you went through, too. When you came back, what was life adjusting? Because you hear from prisoners a lot, but prisoners of war, a little bit different. How was your transition back from Vietnam back to America?
Things had changed here. That total of 7 years I was gone. And, you know, it was like Rip Van Winkle waking up after a long sleep. Well, you know, the styles had changed, the music had changed, the humor had changed. Everything changed, but it was exciting for me to get back into the swim of things. You know, for whatever reason, Kansas had not canceled my driver's license. So I hopped back in a car after not ridden one for 7 years. This is in the Great Lakes Naval Hospital near Chicago. And I'm driving down a freeway and I see in front of me this good looking blonde, you know, and I gotta check this out. And I drive up next to her and she's got a mustache.
me too.
So it was a thrill. It was no problem at all. You know, I had dreamed about that moment and lived it in that prison camp 1,000 times. I had dreamed about flying airplanes and traveling and reading and seeing, and, you know, it came very naturally to me.
After you did get out, did you have a mentor or anyone? Did the military say, we know that had to be incredibly difficult, here's some people who are going to help you through it, or were you kind of on your own?
No, I had a lot of help, but a lot of it really didn't make much sense. The first person that
with
I
the
met,
military, no, something didn't make sense.
Well, the first person. Well, first of all, of course, I did not know that my wife had filed for divorce. Okay, and so every prisoner of war coming out of North Vietnam had an escort, and the escort knew all about my bank statement and all this stuff, but he wouldn't tell me anything about my wife. And of course, that's the first thing I asked. And so so I got to Clark Air Force Base in the Philippines. And the first guy there was going to be a psychiatrist. I'm going to see this psychiatrist. And I asked him about my wife. He wouldn't tell me either. And he said, let me tell you what's going to happen to you. When I start telling you this news, you're going to go into deep depression. You're going to get really angry. And he said, I want you to go back to your hospital room and pound on the walls and kick in the door and tear your pillow apart. Just get really, really, because if you don't let this out, you know, if you don't show this vitriol that's all within you right now, eventually you're going to have a mental breakdown. Well, I said, but doc, I don't feel that way. You know, I don't, I don't, I'm happy, man. I got a doorknob on the inside of my door.
Yeah.
what could be better than that?
The little things now. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So he said, no, he said, I guarantee you that if you don't get this out of your system, the sooner the better. If you don't get it out, the longer you wait, the more tragic this mental breakdown will be. Well, that was 47 years ago. I'm still waiting for the mental breakdown. So, yeah, you know, they were concerned and they assumed that we would be zombies. They had our families brief to institutionalize us the rest of our lives because, you know, they just thought we'd be vegetables coming out of there. Mm-hmm. And I guess it's kind of logical to expect that those kind of conditions for that long, you know, you could never be normal again. But, you know, like I said, we've 591 guys come back. We've got two ambassadors from our number, a governor, they're telling us we're healthier today, mentally and physically, than we had been prisoners of war. Wow. And in fact, talk about, PTSD, we are sort of the poster boys for a new moniker, PTG. Don't know if you've heard of that.
Post-traumatic growth.
Yeah. Growth. Huh? That you can actually grow through these periods of stress. And so, in fact, there's I'm a part of a program. It's called Boulder Crest, and it's really partially run by the psychologists who have come up with post-traumatic growth, and really doing great work in Virginia and in Arizona, Boulder Crest.
And I know General Mattis is a big proponent of that too. He's talked about it, given speeches and things like that. For those that are listening to our show that are younger and they need some advice of what to do to keep yourself bored while you're quarantined, did you have any games that you developed while you were in Vietnam that you would play by yourself?
All kinds of games. I started by going back through my mind and trying to remember every book I'd ever read, every movie I'd ever seen, every girl I'd ever dated. Now, that was the fun part.
Short list.
Wait a minute. and that took about 3 months. So I'm 24 years old, okay? 3 months to exhaust my memory. And then I started to plan ahead. And I planned the next 20 years of my life around my wife, of course. Mm-hmm. In fact, when I planned it one direction, staying in the military, another direction, just cruising along, and a third direction, and I still wasn't home. So I kept thinking about that. But yes, and of course, once we got communication with everybody else, we played games. Can you imagine a four-handed bridge in four different prison cells using toilet paper to make your cards out of? It would take all day, but we had
time.
Exactly. And that's what we were, you know, doing. We were exercising time. No, we had all kinds of games, anybody could come up with.
Now, did you ever, whenever you were there, one of the games was it, because I know that as an officer, you're a smart guy, went to the Naval Academy, knew exactly how much money you were supposed to make. Were you calculating, when I come back, this is how much back pay I'm going to get?
we calculated all of that. And we made plans. We spent that money.
Oh, I bet.
One of the guys sailed around the world. That's what he was going to do, buy a sailboat. In fact, he came back and did it. He came back and spent his money and in fact, homeschooled his kids on his sailboat around the world. One guy, he was from South Carolina. He was going to come back and be a pig farmer. And he had everything figured out about where he's, you know, how he's going to buy the farm and raise the pigs. Wow. So
it's like the pig version of Bubba from Forrest Gump.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah.
But visualization, huge thing in moving yourself forward and staying positive and keeping going. And I think is that one of the things that really gave you hope and made you say, I am going to get through this?
Absolutely. And, you know, visualization allows you to escape your surroundings. And, you know, back to your question, Chaps, about, you know, people that are homebound now. And obviously I was homebound, isolated for 2,103 days. And it took a while, you know, to figure this out, to be comfortable in myself. But, you know, we wrote poetry, we wrote songs, I made a piano. I've been a musician, but never played the piano. But I knew that my span would span an octave plus two. I could span octave plus one, nine notes on this piano. So I drew a piano keyboard. I knew where the black keys were and the white keys, and I would play this piano. The interesting part. Now, of course, I didn't know that much about piano, but I knew chords and the basics, sharps and flats and majors and minors and that kind of stuff. And so I would play this piano. The interesting, and it's just scratched out on my board bed, right? Mm-hmm. And the interesting part was, after 2 or 3 months of playing this piano, when I would hit a wrong note, I would actually hear that error, that wow. discord in my mind. You know, it was just, you know, talk about visualization. It mm-hmm. it really was true that we could do that.
Amazing.
And incredible.
Final question for me. All these years later, and throughout the course of moving on past that, did you ever have contact again with any of the people who imprisoned you, or would you ever dream of going back and, I mean, I know it's impossible, you know, but do you ever think about that?
I went back 3 years ago. The head of the history department, University of Hanoi, contacted me several years ago, wanted me to come back for a project that he was doing. He wanted me to meet the fighter pilots that I'd fought against. And, you know, I had gotten these dogfights in my airplane. And so he wanted me to meet these guys. He wanted me to meet the camp commander, the warden, the enemy who was in charge of the prison camp and also in charge of all of our torture. He wanted me to come back meet this guy. Well, I resisted. I really didn't have a whole lot of interest. And finally, he said, "Hey, you know, this guy's in his 80s and really want to put you two guys together before he dies." And so I said, "Well, if you pay for a vacation for my family, I'll bring my family over there." So Susan and three of our four kids and I went back to Vietnam.
I imagine you never thought that'd be a vacation site for you while you were there.
No, I didn't. But but it's changed a lot, and the people are nice. And, you know, it really was. And there's some really beautiful places in Vietnam that I had seen from the air, but never on the ground. So I met with the camp commander. And it was really interesting. I went to his house, and he, when he saw me, he smiled and he wanted to hug me, you know, and I was just really surprised. And his first words to me were, I was proud to be your warden from 1968 to 1972. And my finest moment, he said, was keeping you healthy and happy during your stay here. I'm saying, Bubba, it's me.
Yeah. Okay. So,
you don't remember.
I bet you wanted to throw on some gloves and just give it to him right there.
Well, you know, my mother taught me forgiveness a long time ago, and I found that forgiveness was one of the survival techniques. I'd forgiven this guy a long time ago, and I didn't have any axe to grind. But it was just kind of interesting that he denied. I talked to him for an hour. He totally denied ever harming a prisoner of war. Interestingly enough, okay, my entire time, well, I was there for 11 days, I talked to cab drivers, and I spoke at the embassy. I went to the university. I spoke to a lot of people there. Nobody would ever admit that Americans were tortured during the Vietnam War. Mm-hmm. My last day there, okay, I'm in a park. I sent my family home. I'm still in this park in the middle of Hanoi. And here's this lady selling postcards in the park. And I could tell she was my age or maybe a little bit younger. She's missing her entire right leg. Okay, she's just got her black pajamas tied in a knot, and she's on crutches with this bag over her shoulder. Postcards? Who wants to buy a postcard? She was speaking excellent English. And I said, oh, I'll buy a postcard, but I want to know your story. Sit down on this park bench with me and tell me your story. She was flattered that I wanted to know. I said, how'd you lose your leg? She said, linebacker two. Now, linebacker two was the B-52 bombings, but it was a secret word, you know. It was, and I was really surprised to hear her come back with that. You know, I mean, I would think you would say it was an air raid, you know, or mm-hmm. B-52s or something, but linebacker two. So... So I sort of, you know, I'm thinking I better figure out if she's legit. I said, what was the date? And she said, oh, 24 December 1972. I said, yep, that was a linebacker too. All right. That was the B-52 bombings that actually ended that war. Well, so we got to talking and I said, you speak great English. You're out here selling postcards, eking a living. I said, you could be an interpreter, or you could be a docent in one of the museums. Oh, no, she said with a real serious look on her face, the government would never give an invalid a permit to do something like that. Mm. So I'm thinking, okay, here are two people on this park bench, both scarred by this war. One of them has two airplanes, two sailboats, drives a big car, lives a wonderful life. And the other, and she was at least as smart as I am, was selling postcards in a park. And I'm thinking the only difference in the two of us was the society in which we live. That in the United States, we have an opportunity to do anything we want, to be anything we want, to succeed in anything we want. And she did not, because of the communist nature of her government. Wow. So she finally said, you're about my age. What were you doing on Christmas of 1972? I said, I was right here with you. She said, you were a prisoner of war? I said, yeah, I was a prisoner of war. I said, tell me this. You've been to the museums. You know the history. Do you think the prisoners of war were tortured? Oh, no. She said, no. The prisoners were treated better than the civilians during that war. I said, how do you know that? Oh, it's government documentaries. They show us these documentaries, and we know the truth about the prisoners of war in Vietnam. So, I don't know. Makes you pretty pretty happy to be an American.
Yeah, that'll do it. That'll do it. My goodness.
Well, Captain Plum, we appreciate you taking the time out of your busy schedule to join us here on our show. We'd love to have you back sometime, because we haven't even scratched the surface of your amazing life.
Yes.
Absolutely, chaps. I enjoy being with you, and I've listened to a lot of your podcasts. You guys are doing a great job, you know, for the troops and retired guys and gals out there. I salute you for that.
Thank you very much. Sir.
The name of your book one more time, in case anybody wants to.
Sure, it's I'm No Hero. It's in its 33rd printing, and my website is charlieplum.com, charlieplumb.com, and I autograph every book that I sell off that website. So. And of course, I'm on social media. You know, as Chap said, I'm doing a series now on staying at home and all the challenges.
And it's great. If you need a little pick me up, I was telling Mr. Plum before we actually started that whenever my truck got stolen last week or whatever it was, I was feeling real sad sack Sally about myself and went back on Instagram and saw him talking about perseverance, and I snapped out of it real damn quick.
Yeah,
good for you guys.
Yes, but we'll definitely be tagging him.
Thank you so much. Yes, you'll be able to find him there, and we'll put a link to your book too. Thank you very much, sir.
Yeah, thank you, sir.
Thanks, Katie. Thanks, Chaps.
Perfect story for whenever we are stuck in quarantine and need a little perspective about how bad things are. They could always be much, much worse. Thanks to Charlie for applying that little wake-up call, essentially. I can't imagine what he went through. It is, I try to like put myself in that position, what I would think, and it's impossible to do. I cannot, in my brain, I cannot put myself in a six-year timeline.
Well, I mean, because you've never been put in a situation any time in your life that can even remotely mirror that scenario, even come close. No. Yeah.
Two Purple Hearts, Bronze Star, POW, just an unbelievable, one of my favorite interviews that we've done, and just the nicest guy. Has emailed me a couple times after and sending me pictures of him flying and doing things. Talk about living life to the fullest after you're given another opportunity to. He is the personification of that. Let's move on to round number five. Do a little animal goofing. What do we got?
Come on!
Round number five, animal goofing. Now that I am an animal enthusiast myself with my cat Spork, I feel like very in tune with the animal world. And so we went out on the ZBT social media and we asked followers, your roommate hiding a rabbit in her barracks wall locker, the angry buffalo on your field op, the snake your buddy almost stepped on at jungle training, what's the weirdest animal or bug encounter you've ever had in uniform? So not like seeing a military working dog, but like the strange stuff. So mine was my very first roommate ever in the barracks. As soon as I got into the fleet, I get back from PT. She was in a different unit, so we were in different units. I get back from PT one day, and I'm like, what are these little brown balls on our carpet? We had shitty old carpet. It was like old-ass nasty barracks. Like, these little fucking brown balls everywhere, man. And then the next day, I come back from PT, and I'm showering and changing over, and I hear this, like, scratch, 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 coming from her wall locker, and I'm like, what the fuck is that? She didn't lock her wall locker. This lady was a hot mess.
Oh, unsecured. That's unsecured.
So wow. I opened it nasty. Up, and lo and behold, I included the picture on the thing. There was a fucking rabbit in her wall locker in the darkness. Those were rabbit turd balls on the floor that I was finding.
Ew.
I confronted her. I took this picture where I'm holding the rabbit and I'm looking real mean, and I send it to her and I go, I guess we just keep rabbits in dark wall lockers or something. I said something that was like, oh, good, good. But I felt so bad for this animal that she was keeping in the, like, it's inhumane. It's so shitty.
Right.
And so it's like, what the hell? But so I know people, I'm sure I'm not the only one whose barracks roommate
were a common pet to keep.
Rolled up with some weird ass shit. And so people had some really fun answers. So I thought we'd kind of take our time for round five and go through them because the answers were really fun. So we had Dennis West said, weirdest animal encounter in uniform, patrolling the Bulgarian woods. While walking through a river, a giant fucking boar, looked like a Prius, came sprinting down a cliff running between my buddy and I. And it hashtag Parkered up.
Yo, boars can be scary. They will mess you up.
They will fuck you up.
Yeah.
There was one when I first moved to San Antonio, we went on this big walk behind our neighborhood and we were walking down the squad. It was just me, Kelsey, and Annalise at that time. And we're taking our little dog. I had a little mountain cur and we get to this spot and there's a dead Rottweiler, like a huge 100-pound Rottweiler that's laid there. And you could see like the tusk marks in the side. And I was like, oh, shit, there's some wild boars that killed this fucking Rottweiler.
Yeah, dude, it's no joke. We had a couple answers in here. Another guy, MS Martin 3101, said, Berlin, 1988, wild pigs in the forest ran my LPOP up a tree. Had to send people, they had to send people to save this guy from a tree because of...
Snaps aren't up of a tree. Those pigs are oinking all over.
So, and then people commented. They're like, yeah, those tusks are no joke. So many people commented. They had there was another group. It's in here somewhere. But people saying, even on boot camp, when they were in the field or whatever, doing whatever, and all of a sudden, wild boars, I guess in Arkansas or wherever the fuck they do that stuff, there's wild boars running around, that wild boars,
here,
like,
Texas, yeah,
common thing, fucking up training, because they're, like, legit, no joke. I had no idea until I started talking to you.
Yeah, we would have to pull the dogs away, like, whenever, and get them back to the place if there was a big thing of wild boars while I was teaching at the dog school here.
Yeah, I had no idea. This next one, too, I had no idea, because I did two tours in Afghanistan. Zero clue about this. Rickest Patrick said, I had a pet hedgehog in Afghanistan. Oh, yeah. He just came up to me and let me hold him. Just walked right up to him. And then all these other people, Justin Coates said, yeah, dude, one of my soldiers captured one and turned it into a pet. They loved that little thing. Terminal
Lance.
Yep,
we had one in Fallujah. Yeah.
What?
Can I tell you, growing up playing Sonic the Hedgehog on Sega, when I first saw an actual hedgehog, I was totally shocked because based on the video game, I don't know, I just expected it to be much bigger and not this tiny little furry thing.
You know what's even more than Sonic the Hedgehog shock?
What?
The Tasmanian Devil.
Yes. Yeah.
Very much so.
Doesn't look
so.
Anything like
big
it.
Big time.
Very true.
Doesn't wear backwards jeans and big baggy shirts at all.
Ninja Turtles?
It doesn't have a clever quip at every turn.
Right.
We were raised to think animals are going to be a lot cooler than they are. But a lot of guys saying, oh, yeah, our unit loved our little hedgehog when we were out. I was like, well, I felt so cheated. The Donnie Different said, while bore sighting our 50 cal before doing a range, the guy holding the panel with the targets on it had a goat eating out of his pocket in Djibouti. So he's trying to get his shit done. And while he's trying to do all this stuff to set up for this big range, there's a goat just following around.
But how much would that make your day better, dude? Like, if so you had just better. Like a goat that was just chilling with you there, yeah. You didn't have him on a leash. You just like to hang out.
Oh, it would be
you
a
fucking
delight.
Button hook me. I didn't know you were going to button hook me.
Ah. Yeah, that fat shit, Gary Puto. He threw a cinder block. He threw a cinder block, chipped one of my horns.
Yeah, superimposed. What the fuck? The fucking idiot.
He's walking away. He says, I hear him say, what the fuck is superimposed? That fucking idiot.
Goat goofing. This next one. Wait, do you guys know where Incirlik is? Incirlik?
Mm-mm. No.
Apparently, so working mids at Incirlik, Incirlik.
I don't know if that's a place or an acronym or what, or a misspelling or something.
Well, no, a bunch of people commented. They're like, oh, that place is fucking wild. Like, a bunch of people were like, oh, shit, Incirlik, crazy town USA, or wherever the fuck it is. And I was like, I've never heard of it. Who knows? They said he's working there in a tent city right next to the flight line. Sleep was always a joke. You'd finish a shift, walk back to your tent, and he goes to do this. He included a photo. It is like a foot-long centipede. I'm looking at it. Makes me want to throw up in my mouth. Do you guys see the photo?
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah.
It is. It's. I can't look at it anymore. He said he like never slept again. He could never sleep again. I would fucking die.
That's a Turkish Air Force base, apparently.
Oh, yeah. People were commenting so much inebriation there. Truly a wild place. Yeah. Somebody else was like, it was wild. Spent a couple weeks there, blah, blah, blah. Anyways, another one. One laxaholic said, howler monkeys throwing poop at us in Panama. Another guy, Bees Pete Burke, said being attacked by a troop of baboons in Kenya. Monkeys was a common one along with the pigs.
Baboons
that was a tough
will fuck
one.
Your ass up, too.
Yeah, they'll definitely will. This one was cute. Aaron DeCamp said, BCT at Fort Sill, Oklahoma in 2016. 3 a.m. fire watch. I was on an outpost tower, and an armadillo, because, fuck, I fucked this one up.
Okay, keep going.
Keep going.
And then our, yeah, keep going.
This guy, Aaron DeCamp, said he was on fire watch. It was 3 a.m. and he ended up skittering up a guard post because an armadillo charged at him. And he said, I thought they were endangered or something and I didn't want to get in trouble for fighting back. I just love that he thought. Like,
I
had killed an armadillo because he was charging me at the LPOP.
I like the response, though. It's Jeff Waitman said, Texas road bump? Nah, just pump that thing.
3 points. This next one, Iron Captain. Have you guys heard of this? This was insane. I kind of want to look this up. A Marine recon team in Vietnam lost a Marine to a tiger attack. Their commander sent every team they could muster into the field to hunt and kill that tiger. There's a whole book about it. And apparently it's Force Recon Diary 1970, A True Account of Courage in Vietnam. And this story is backed up by many other people. That's the last thing you would expect would take you out in Vietnam as a fucking tiger. Just
and the very net submission is very different than a tiger. It's just a pet wasp in a Gatorade bottle. Yeah, very different.
Steph got a bag. A pet wasp in Gatorade bottle. And there were so many little critters, bees on strings and like bees in Gatorade bottle, shit like that. We had a this one got a huge response. We had a skunk bite someone's head in the middle of the night.
Oh.
And somebody said, oh yeah, skunks are rabies vectors. And did they cut the head off with a shovel for rabies? Oh yeah, it was nuts. Came right in the tent. Did it spray the person? Nope. Ended up cutting its head off with a shovel. Just like you said, pretty much. Just, holy shit. I didn't know that was a thing. A lot of snakes, people in the prone, crawling through the field for field ops, and, oh, fuck, there's a snake next to me kind of thing. This one was really cool. One of those moments I think you think back to. V. Markov said, northeastern Iraq at the top of Mawet Plateau. We fell asleep next to our campfire, so they're way out in the boonies somewhere in Iraq. They wake up early in the morning, and there's a herd of spotted deer. They were using the fire for warmth as well. So they, like, cool. Wake up, and there's, like, this little group of deer around them.
I didn't
pretty
even
cool.
know there was deer in Iraq.
Me neither.
Didn't,
I had no idea.
Didn't know that either.
This one made me sick to my stomach. Nothing's more fun than stepping into a 3-by-3-foot crater in the ground with, a leaf, with like, thick leaves, and 300 spiders come rushing up your legs in the wall of the hole. Nope. The fire ants at boot camp. Holy
fuck. I have a spider story. I am one day remove from leaving Iraq to go to Kuwait to go home, and we're in the gym. I'm working out with a buddy. I'm squatting. I get the bar off the rack. I'm about to start doing my squats, and a camel spider the size of my head pulls up onto the platform, and I just kind of froze, and I just start screaming, get it, get it, get it, get it, get it. He takes a 25-pound plate and just drops it, smushes that thing flat. Then we kept working.
Gotta do it.
Yeah, seriously. God. I'm not messing with
one of my buddies
spider.
Got bit by a camel spider, and it had like he had this big gray like wart looking thing on his head for like 6 months.
Yeah,
I didn't think it was ever gonna go away. It was
no
disgusting.
Thanks.
Disgusting.
Yeah.
I thought they were a myth.
No, they're very much not.
They're very real.
Fuck. Well, the last one I'll read, which just delighted me, and sometimes you ever read an anecdote from somebody, it's just a quick sentence or two about something random, but to you it encapsulates a whole spirit of the Corps, or a whole spirit of like infantry, or a whole spirit of whatever.
Mm. Yeah.
So this one for me did that. At Lawnard Barak said, in Iraq, another Marine saw a dragonfly, held out his arm and declared, "Come to me." And it fucking did. Landed directly on his hand. A dozen witnesses. I just love this Marine. And you know they all freaked the fuck out. It made their day. They talked about it for weeks. It was like a dragonfly in Iraq that landed on his hand when he told it to. I don't know. I just love that kind of wacky stuff.
That is good. I had one when I was at MP school, and I was the class leader there. And I said that if anybody could guess what was in my cargo pocket, then I would be the one who buffed the decks, like for all three decks. And whenever... all like a bunch of Marines guessed, and they were all wrong because I had caught a bird and put a bird in my cargo pocket.
So
everybody got to do it. It was a fun time.
This before Zero Block 30, when you and I first started, when you found me on Twitter, I was working concessions in Philadelphia, and I go into the Chickies and Pete's, one of the stands. I had the keys and everything. It was off hours. I had to go put chicken fingers in a freezer in there. And I opened the thing, and there was a bird trapped inside the Chickie and Pete's chicken finger place. I was like, oh my God. So I start getting closer and closer to it, and it's still, and I get it in my hands. I'm like, holy fuck, I'm holding this bird in my hands. And I backed out the door, and all these union electricians, there was tons of electricians that worked at the convention center because they're always setting up shit.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, it was big, tough, like Philly guys. And I was like, I'm really sorry. But before I release this thing, I just need people to see that I have a bird in my hands. And they're like, okay. Anyway, it was very exciting. It was thrilling. But cool story by me. Cool way to
cap. That is a cool story, Kate. Let's move on to save rounds and alibis. What do we got, cons?
So the other day, I was outside and I went for a walk. And a few weeks ago, I had put up a tweet. There's just like when you live in a mostly urban environment, seeing trees is not as prevalent as someone in the suburbs or somewhere where you live, chaps. So certain mm-hmm. trees just kind of stand out for you more. And I put up a tweet with a picture of my second favorite tree in Hoboken. And then I'm walking out yesterday or the other morning. They just took that tree down. I don't know if it got damaged in the storm that we had on Monday.
I was sad for you for that.
But I was like, this majestic, gorgeous tree that brightened up this street. And now it's just gone. I was like,
I love that.
Damn Corona.
Clem was like, this is the saddest two-tweet thread I've ever seen. It was like, tweet number one, this is my favorite, such a beautiful tree, tweet number two. And they cut it down. It was like so sad. It was like a week apart, too, which made it even.
Oh, man.
It looked like a tree that would be in a Winnie the Pooh novel.
Yeah.
It was
great.
Gorgeous. Oh. It was a top-level tree.
Don't take my trees, Corona.
Yeah, seriously. Anything else, Gons?
That's all I got.
All right, Kate?
Yeah. On my end, I talked about him on the show before. I've written a couple of blogs about him, but my great uncle John.
Mm.
So he was Marine Corps. He joined Sergeant John Cook, joined the Marines in August of 1946. That towards the end of World War II, I think was still. He was stationed in the U.S. Navy submarine base in the Panama Canal Zone. And then the Korean War broke out, and his entire detachment was drafted to the 1st Marine Division at Camp Pendleton, and off to Korea he went. He was a machine gunner in Charlie Company, 1st Marine Regiment. 1st Marine Division, and Charlie Company went into Blue Beach on September 15th. They used grappling hooks and scaling ladders in order to climb a 16-foot seawall. They fought for 10 days until they arrived in Seoul, the capital of South Korea. And in his own words, he said, "The war was a series of continuous short and bloody skirmishes, one after another. We never slept. We were quartered, or they were never quartered in any buildings. They slept outside. Whatever was in our backpacks was our only possessions. Time, days, dates, months were unimportant since we could see no end in sight and had no idea how the war was going." And he kept an awesome sense of humor, which even in his old age was one of the trademarks of his. And this, even though that was a tough situation and really, he was part of the Frozen Chosen
mm-hmm.
and kept such an incredible attitude and love for the Marine Corps that was so contagious to me in times where I was having a tough time now and then. And when I was in going through boot camp and throughout my years in the Corps, he has pictures. Chesty Puller was their leader. Mm-hmm. And he has pictures with his daughter and Chesty Puller shaking his daughter's tiny little hand. And just at reunions and stuff like that. And all his letters said from the desk of Chesty Puller. And it meant a lot to me, especially once I got in and attitude towards women sometimes. We talk about Marines United and stuff like that. And to have this Korean War machine gunner sending me letters saying, keep going. You are a Marine. You do matter. Like, you're a fucking Marine as much as I am. It meant a ton to me when I was in. And he passed away the other day from complications due to the coronavirus. And I very much regret that since moving up here, I was not as good at keeping in touch with him as I should have been. And so if you have someone like that in your life, reach out to them, keep in touch with them. Their stories are so important. And I am glad that when I did live down in Delaware County, Delco, he lived there too. I did visit him a good amount. And his house was like a Marine Corps museum. Every inch from every war, every genre. He fought for Iwo. He was Korean War, and he called it the Forgotten War. He fought for Iwo Jima veterans who were local to have plaques put up in the library. He fought for other veterans to get recognition instead of himself. And he was just a Marine's Marine. He just to me was... If you needed motivation and you needed to drink the Kool-Aid a little bit, he was the one to turn to. Just an incredible guy, an amazing sense of humor. I went to his Marine Corps ball. I was like 30. I was the youngest one there, and I got to cut the cake. But just, I don't know, I'm rambling, but he meant a lot to me, and he, I think, is part of a generation that is so, so, so valuable to this country. And I just, Sergeant John Cook, you know, Chesty Puller, wherever you are, I bet you're with Sergeant John Cook now, too. And that brings me a little peace. I bet that's the first person he... Hey, where's Chesty when he got up there? But anyways, thinking of him and his family, because I know a lot of families are going through this right now where they can't be with them in the end. And just, you know, but his service is not forgotten. Korean War veterans not forgotten. And I'm rambling still, but just it's heavy on my mind just thinking of him and his service. So
Sergeant John Cook, fair winds and following seas to Valhalla, brother. It's on the retreat. Yep.